Over the past 50 years, more than 1,000 square miles of wetlands along the coast of Louisiana have crumbled and turned to open water. Scientists say that's mainly because the U.S. government tamed the Mississippi River to stop it from flooding, which triggered an environmental chain reaction. Political and business leaders worry that if the wetlands keep disappearing, major industries from fishing to oil and gas could be disrupted. So they want to unleash the Mississippi to undo some of the damage. But as scientists try to repair nature, they could trigger a new round of side effects. Daniel Zwerdling reports for NPR News and American Radio Works in the final part of his series on Nature's Revenge.
Fishermen like George Beresich know better than anybody how much the economy depends on the environment. He practically grew up on this boat, working with his father.
Come on, let him slack off, Mickey. Give a little slack, Mick.
At the moment, he's bobbing along Louisiana's coast. The sun is dropping, the sky is turning pink, and Beresich is dropping shrimp nets like giant spider webs into the bay.
I worry about the coastline, I worry about the environment, because I am 100% dependent on what the environment is capable of producing. Yeah, I'm worried.
Beresich can tell you all the basic facts. These waters in southern Louisiana produce more seafood than any state except Alaska. That's partly because we're surrounded by some of the greatest wetlands in the world. And scientists say that the shrimp and crabs and fish need these wetlands to thrive. Beresich says it's already harder than ever to make a living. There's foreign competition. He complains about government regulations. But he says that's nothing compared to what's going to happen if the wetlands keep disappearing.
I know in the long run, it's going to be worse when everything's gone. Southeast Louisiana cannot do without the commercial fishing industry. Maybe it's a selfish way to look at it. I got a plan for my family.
So Beresich was encouraged when he heard that government officials and scientists were launching a pilot project to see if they could save some of the wetlands along the coast. He never dreamed that he'd become a protagonist in a battle that's shaken the state government. He's living proof that when the government tries to solve one problem, they sometimes create another.
Now, I know for a fact that nothing has ever been done on this scale before. That's what bothers us. Do these scientists really know everything they're talking about? Because a lot of predictions they made were so far from the reality, it's funny.
They call the pilot project the Carnarvon Water Diversion Project. It's a steel and concrete structure on the banks of the Mississippi River. It looks sort of like a dam.
We're downstream of New Orleans, about 20 miles. We have a structure that's built here into the levee of the Mississippi River, which is here for flood control.
Jack Fadine supervises the project for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
It's like five square holes going underneath the river for 500 feet, and each hole is 15 feet square.
The government launched this project a little over 10 years ago to see if it can undo what the U.S. Army has done over the past 100 years. The Army built 2,000 miles of levees along the Mississippi River and its branches to stop the river from flooding. But recent studies show that Louisiana's wetlands need to be flooded. They need regular doses of river water and mud to thrive. The levees are starving the wetlands to death. So scientists designed Carnarvon partly to see if they can save them without flooding people's homes. When Fredine gives the word, a workman presses some buttons. And suddenly, the placid surface of the Mississippi River begins bubbling, roiling. Huge gates are opening underwater and uncovering the giant holes, and the river is pouring through the levee into a marsh on the other side.
The original concept of this was to mimic the spring floods, to replenish the marshes with fresh water that would have been coming through if the levees weren't here in the way to block out the floods.
So in a way, technology helped hurt nature in the first place. Now you're using technology to repair nature and mimic it.
It's a start.
Some scientists say it's exactly the start that the wetlands need. A researcher named Denise Reed takes me out in the marsh to show me.
We're going to go over to see some marsh over there by those trees, and that's where we're going to see how the fresh water, the nutrients, and the sediments coming out of the diversion structures revitalizing the marsh. So we're going to go see that just over the other side there.
Reed moved here from England so she could study these wetlands for the University of New Orleans. She'd make a great scout leader. She's got no-nonsense hair and infectious smile. When we hop off the boat, Reed forages through the grasses in the wetland like she's leading an expedition.
Look at all this wonderful green, you know, lots of nice big growth on these plants.
Reed says before they started the Carnarvon project, this wetland was sick, and it would have felt completely different to walk here. When wetlands are sick, the soil gets all mushy and it turns to open water. But now we're walking on firm ground. Reed says this means that the marsh is coming back.
You look at those ponds over there in the distance, you see how the grass is gradually moving in from the edge and filling in. You can see that just here. You see that grass growing out into the middle of this area. This would have all been bare. What is land loss? Land loss is marsh turning to open water. Here, we've got open water in ponds filling in and becoming marsh. A lot of people think it's hopeless down here in coastal Louisiana. But just coming down here and looking at this makes us believe that we can do this.
So, a coalition of scientists and government officials wants to build a chain of projects, like Carnarvon, all along the Mississippi River. They want Congress to give them at least $14 billion to do it. They say that's the only way to save some of the key wetlands that are left.
Catch it if you can, Meg.
But the history of the Carnarvon project suggests that when you try to control nature, there are bound to be surprises.
Catch the line, one of y'all. Catch that line.
Fishermen like George Barisich say the first sign of trouble was the shrimp. Barisich says over the years, he's mastered the craft of catching shrimp, like an old angler hooks his trout. But a few years after the government built the Carnarvon project, one of the main kinds of shrimp stopped showing up.
They never came in. They never came in. So you lost the production from that particular area. And you just had to get up and leave.
Then strange things started happening to his oysters. Barisich and his family had been producing oysters in this area for years on oyster farms.
These are the best things that's on the market. I mean, you could stack them against any other oyster, any part of the country, and it was always in demand.
But suddenly, a plague of mussels swarmed into the bay. You can't eat this kind of mussel. They're just a nuisance. They swarm around the oysters and attack the shells.
The mussels encapsulated and covered the whole oyster. The whole oyster became covered with mussels. The way sometimes you couldn't even see the oyster. It was in there, but you couldn't see it.
Barisich says within 3 years, his prize oysters were worthless. State researchers acknowledge today that all these changes happened mainly because of Carnarvon. When the government unleashed the Mississippi and sent river water and mud gushing into this area, they lowered the salt content of the bay. The scientists wanted to do that to help rebuild the wetlands, but the changes pushed out the shrimp that like salty water, and they attracted the gangs of mussels that don't.
And that's what gets fishermen hot. You know, it'd be just like if you had a piece of property and you farmed tomatoes on it, and they wanted to build an interstate, and they just took it. I said, too bad.
Barisich and other fishermen sued the state of Louisiana for hurting their oysters, not the shrimp. And the courts have ordered the state to pay the fishermen staggering amounts of damages. The cases are tied up in appeals, but the oystermen could theoretically win more than $700 million. It could bankrupt the state budget. Barisich says he'd get more than $4 million himself.
You know, the kind of money that I would get, I would be able to retire.
Do you think you deserve it?
I think I deserve it in principle because it would show the government that you just can't jack people over.
Some people might say, you know what, sometimes when you have a crisis, the coast is disintegrating. Sometimes a few people have to suffer for the public good.
I don't want to be part of that few that suffer. There's got to be another way.
And state officials say the Carnarvon flap has showed them a better way. The state is starting a bigger project like Carnarvon at another spot in the Mississippi, and they're already compensating fishermen who might get hurt. But fishermen aren't the only ones who worry that the $14 billion campaign to save the wetlands could backfire. A few scientists in the campaign are feeling cautious too.
I do not believe at this point in time that we're perhaps ready to scale to a $14 billion effort.
Until a couple months ago, Joe Sajeda ran a prestigious research center at Louisiana State University. He says Louisiana's wetlands are a national treasure, and he says the country should urgently try to protect them. But he says projects like Carnarvon won't work magic. The damage in the wetlands is too vast.
I was in fact talking with the governor, and he actually asked the question, can we save the coast? No, I said, from the standpoint of returning it to a former condition, I don't think we can save the coast. There'll be small areas that may be improved.
Cejeda says nobody's tried to restore nature before on such a massive scale, and they need to do more studies to figure out which strategies will really work best. In Louisiana, this is not a popular view. State officials say it's going to be hard enough to convince Congress to spend billions of dollars on wetlands when it's scrounging for money to fight terrorists. They say the last thing they need is a scientist who dissents. Cejeda says some of his colleagues have warned him to back off.
The phrase that's been used is that you're too honest. I've not really had anybody say, don't say this, but I have had people say that in the wrong light, what you're saying could actually hurt the effort that everyone feels should go forward.
Back in the wetlands, Denise Reed says she's heard those arguments before. She and Cejeda work together in the coalition that's trying to restore the coast. But Reed and most of the other scientists say there's no time left for doubts. They say the country has to do something dramatic to start saving the wetlands now.
We can't wait another 10 years. There won't be much marsh left to save. We can't afford to go slower. The problem is so serious that action is clearly needed. I mean, this is not really just about marshes. This is about the future of coastal Louisiana.
Reed says it's true. They don't know yet exactly how they'll save the coast, but they'll learn from projects like Carnarvon as they go along. And she says everybody should have learned something from trying to tame the Mississippi River. There's no quick fix when you try to fix nature.
No, it's not going to be easy. We're going to alter the way things are going to look down here. They're not going to be the same anymore. I mean, they're not going to be the same if we don't do anything, because it's all going to go to hell in a handbasket. People's lives are going to change.
Denise Reed in the wetlands of Louisiana. I'm Daniel Zwerdling for NPR News and American Radio Works.
American Radio Works is the documentary project of Minnesota Public Radio and NPR News. There is more information about the wetlands at npr.org.